This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
My name is Amy Biancoli.
This is Adam Patton.
Hi, this is Elsie from Los Angeles.
I'm calling from Tennessee.
Yes, I have a question.
Why is testing so hard to ramp up?
We hear a lot about the false negatives in testing. What about false positives?
Isn't it better for everyone just to behave as if they are a carrier?
How does the country-going experience change because of COVID-19?
You know, I don't think graduation is just about me. It really is about my whole family and what my parents have done for me.
Tonight we have NPR journalists and outside experts on hand to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about the pandemic and the way we live now at npr.org/nationalconversation, or on Twitter you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Today we learned that in the month of April alone, more than 20 million people lost their jobs in the U.S. These are historic numbers. The unemployment rate is now close to 15%. It hasn't been anywhere near that since the Great Depression. Even healthcare workers are getting layoffs and furloughs as patients postpone non-essential medical procedures. Michelle Sweeney is a nurse on furlough.
I mean, nursing is who you are. It's like a slap in the face. And I get there's a financial picture, but it's very emotional.
Then there's the case of Rick Bright, the vaccine specialist who says he was demoted for refusing to promote unproven treatments for COVID-19. His lawyers say the federal watchdog looking into his case found reasonable grounds that he was retaliated against. At the White House, the vice president's spokeswoman, Katie Miller, has tested positive for the virus. She's the second White House staffer this week to test positive.
Katie, she tested very good for a long period of time, and then all of a sudden today she tested positive. She hasn't come into contact with me. She spent some time with the vice president.
The White House now says anyone in contact with the president will be tested daily. In the U.S., there are now 1.2 million confirmed cases and more than 76,000 deaths. Public health experts say one of the most important requirements for lifting stay-at-home orders is mass testing. Yesterday, NPR and Harvard released a new analysis showing that only 9 states are doing enough testing to make it safe to relax social distancing. You've sent us lots of questions on this topic, so here to give us some answers, we've got Mark Lipsitch. He is a professor of epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
I know you didn't conduct this study I just mentioned, but I'm curious, of those 9 states that have enough testing capacity, how does that overlap with the states that are starting to open up right now? Are we seeing some states reopen that don't have enough tests to know how widespread the disease is?
I think there are a lot of states that are in the process of opening, and I'm concerned that we're, in most of those cases, don't have enough testing capacity.
Let's get into the question of why. We have a question here from David in Sacramento, California.
I keep hearing about abundant testing, quote unquote, capacity. So my question is, how many tests are currently available to be given?
Professor Lipsitch, do we even have that number?
Well, not really. We have an estimate of the number of tests that have been given per day in recent days. And it's around 300,000. It jumps around a little bit per day. But one of the challenges, I asked my lab group today if they knew the number, and we spent a lot of time looking, and we had to find a private website. There's no, The CDC doesn't give you that number.
And what does that tell you, that number isn't even widely available?
Well, I think it reflects the basic problem that we don't have a national mobilization to make testing and the other parts of the response a priority. We have a really chaotic response at the national level, and that's why it's so hard to understand what's going on and to more importantly, to control what's going on.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a related question here from Adam in San Ramon, California.
Why is testing so hard to ramp up? I hear it's the lack of raw materials, but what specifically is keeping testing from being widely available?
What is the big obstacle? I mean, at first we heard there were not enough tests, then we heard there were enough tests, but not enough swabs. Right now, what's the biggest holdup?
I think the biggest holdup is, again, the lack of a national strategy. I was on a call last night with public health leaders from around the globe, and hearing the sort of really tight coordination that was being done at the national level in each of those countries. And here we have governors trying to get supplies, and it's not just PPE, it's even the swab and testing supplies. And so it's the lack of coordination. And then it is actually the still some of the supplies that are not available in enough quantity to do what we need.
And can you tell us about one of those supplies and why it's not available even months after the demand became apparent? The need became apparent, I should say.
Yeah, I'm not a supply chain expert. I don't know how to describe the reasons for that. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to this next question, which comes from Rebecca in Long Beach, California.
We hear a lot about the false negatives in testing. What about false positives?
Are there false positives as frequently as there are false negatives?
That's a great question. With the virus testing, where you're looking to see whether someone currently has the virus, that's extremely rare. And the reason is that the PCR, the test that's designed to find it, is really specifically targeted at sequences of the virus that are not found in other viruses. It's a different problem with antibody tests.
So you're saying antibody tests may be inaccurate in the other direction?
Antibody tests are inaccurate in both directions, but the virus tests are insensitive sometimes. They don't pick up all the positives, and that's mostly because of the swab itself. It's that you have to actually get virus out of a person, and that's the part that's insensitive. If you actually get it out of the person, the tests themselves are very sensitive.
Huh. All right. Well, our next listener, Reva in Brooklyn, has this question about testing.
My husband and I had the antibody test and got a positive result. But on the test, there's a disclaimer that the antibodies could be from a whole bunch of other coronaviruses. So I'm curious, is that just a legal disclaimer that labs have to put on their test results? Or is it very likely that we actually had one of these other coronaviruses and not COVID-19?
Interesting, because COVID-19 is just one of many coronaviruses. SARS was another coronavirus, so is MERS. There are many more common ones. What are the chances that the antibody test comes back positive because somebody had a different coronavirus that was not COVID-19?
That depends a lot on the test. So that number, the false positive rate, is related to, in part, whether it tests positive from some other coronavirus. Some of the assays are very, very specific, meaning they have very little false positive rates, very low false positive rates, and others have higher ones. And that's mostly, I think, due to cross-reaction with other antibodies to other coronaviruses.
So you're saying it doesn't sound like it's just legalese jargon. It might actually have been that the person had a coronavirus that wasn't COVID-19.
That is certainly possible. And it's especially an issue with some of the at-home or point-of-care tests.
All right. Well, if you have a question about testing for Professor Lipsitch, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation, or on Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. And this next question comes from Elsie in Los Angeles, who's curious about the value of testing.
Isn't it better for everyone just to behave as if they are a carrier? Someone could be tested on a Monday, get a negative result on Friday, but been infected on Wednesday in between. Or they could get a negative test result and then get infected afterwards.
That seems right to me. Professor Lipsitch, what's your take on this?
That is exactly right. And that's one reason why getting quick turnaround for the test so that at least you have an up-to-date answer is important. And there's a lot of innovation working right now to try to get fast tests that give quick answers. But that's absolutely right. Testing by itself doesn't solve the problem, but it is an essential part of the solution, because if we're going to go back to work, we can't all act like carriers, because acting like a carrier means staying at home. If we're going to get back to work, we need to find some way to get up-to-date information about whether someone's infected.
Yeah. All right. This next question comes from Gerald in New Hampshire, who's wondering about antibodies.
Will current testing of COVID-19 also show results of antibodies for COVID-19?
Clarify this for us. Are these two different tests, or would one thing show both?
Usually not. The antibody tests are almost always on blood, while the tests for virus are almost always on either a swab from the nose or the nasopharynx or maybe on saliva. It is possible, in fact, with the antibody tests, with some of the antibody tests, to find what's known as IgM, which is an antibody that comes up quite early in infection. And that can be an indicator that you might well currently have virus. But basically, it's two kinds of tests.
One to see if you have it today and one to see if you had it previously. All right. Yes. Well, this next question comes from Joanne in Philadelphia, and it's about what testing might look like in the future. We've just got less than a minute left, but I think we can squeeze this one in.
Assuming that many people will need to take frequent tests for COVID-19 in the future, are researchers and manufacturers taking steps to make available non-invasive in-home test kits?
Just briefly, Professor Lipsitch, do you think that's a possibility for the near future?
Yeah, there's a lot of work being done right now at Harvard and elsewhere on saliva-based tests and on tests that will give very quick answers.
All right, let's hope it comes soon. Professor Mark Lipsitch, Professor of Epidemiology at the Harvard School of Public Health, we appreciate your joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, we're going to answer your questions about the high rates of unemployment. Go to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. And this is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.